You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, powered by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera, Interstate Batteries has you covered. Visit your local Interstate Battery store today or online at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Nine Finger Chronicles Hunting Podcast brought to you by Exodus Trail Cameras. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and on this podcast, you will find tons of relevant information that will help you become more successful in the field. You'll hear product information directly from the manufacturer and success stories from guys and gals just like you. Sit back, relax, and pour a stiff drink. This episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast starts right now. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast brought to you by Exodus Trail Cameras. If you haven't already, go check out ExodusOutdoorGear.com. Check out their trail cameras. They're pretty bitchin' trail cameras. It is the week of the ATA show, and man, I'm getting ready to go into a lot of meetings this week. I'm getting all my literature ready for the Nine Finger Chronicles and for the Sportsman's Nation, and I'm really excited to hit up Louisville this year for the pure fact this is the first time I'll be going to the ATA show, and it's going to be more about business than it is about going and having a good time. I mean, I'm swamped with meetings the first 2 days, and then there's a little bit of a relaxing period on the last day. But man, nonetheless, I'm really looking forward to getting out there, checking out all the new products that are coming into the hunting industry, and at the same time, getting to hook up with all my old buddies that I haven't seen in a while. And that's one thing I really like about the hunting industry is there is a ton of great people, and we're all kind of like-minded individuals, so that's even better yet, right? It's awesome to meet new people who have new ideas and stuff, but when you get a group of people who just love to hunt and at that love to bow hunt, it's a win-win situation. So really looking forward to that. Now, on today's podcast, we're going to be talking with a guy named Cody Lippincott, and he is going to tell us one hell of a story about a buck that he chased for multiple years, and it's a stud buck on highly pressured public ground. And I love these kind of stories because if guys like him can do it, anybody can do it. All you got to do is put in the hard work, and that's what this podcast is about, man. He talks about all the hard work that went into harvesting this buck, and that's what the story is about. I do want to apologize that I kind of had to end the podcast a little bit quicker than what I usually did, but we hit a time frame window, and that time frame window closed, and I had to leave to go pick up my daughter, and so I ended this podcast somewhat quickly, and I do apologize for that. But today's podcast is brought to you specifically by Wasp Archery. Now, Made in America products, right, are awesome. And when they're made in America, that's great. But not only are they made in America, they are made from literally the best possible material that these guys can get their hands on. I did a podcast a while back, and I think you guys should go search it out, with Fred Dougherty, and he works for Wasp, and he kind of talks about all the quality products that go into the making, the material that go into the making of their broadheads. And as you guys, if you listen to this podcast, you'll know I'm a fan of their fixed blade. I use the Boss 4 blade. And they have mechanicals as well, but I'm a huge fan of their Boss 4 blade. And until it does me wrong, which mechanical broadheads typically don't do you wrong, or excuse me, fixed blade broadheads typically don't do you wrong, I'm going to keep shooting them. It's one of those things where I found what I am confident in, and I'm going to use that product until I am no longer confident in it. And I'm really confident right now in my Boss 4 blades from Wasp. go to their website, and I know the season's over, but they make a good gift. Stock up on them right now. Go check out wasparchery.com, and you can purchase a pair of whatever broadheads you want for a discount of 20% by entering in the discount code 9fingers. So go ahead, enter the discount code 9fingers, and you will save 20%. So there is that. Check out Wasp. I think we're done, man. I think we're done. I think I'm going to go ahead and get right into the podcast today. It's a great one. It's good big buck profile with Cody Lippincott. Enjoy. All right. Today's podcast, I am joined by Mr. Cody Lippincott. How you doing, man?
Good. How about yourself?
Can't complain. I can't complain at all. Yeah. And the reason you're on this podcast is today typically means that something good happened in your life. And that good thing is you killing a gigantic buck. And before we get into the story of this buck, why don't you tell everybody where you're from and what do you do for a living?
Alrighty. I'm from Waynesburg, Pennsylvania. I've been working in the oil and gas industry for about 6 years. Started right out of high school, so I'm out in the field pretty much every day. So I'm out here with these deer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Taking care of gas well, so.
Okay. So on your job, do you get the ability to, like, because if I worked in an outdoor type of job, whether it was like mowing ditches or grading gravel roads or, you know, being a timber estimator or, you know, trimming trees or whatever, I'd be working. But at the same time, in every one of those properties, I'd be looking for deer sign. I would be like trying to figure out if I could get access to specific pieces of property. In your daily routine, do you have those thoughts and ever try to approach people to hunt their properties?
Yeah, I mean, it's honestly nonstop every day. You're constantly finding things, you know, and finding sheds from the road. I probably doubled the land that I could hunt ever since I started in this career. Probably doubled.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's awesome. So let me ask you this question. Before you took this job, did you hunt specifically on public ground or knock on door private, or did your family own any ground?
Yeah, so I was hunting pretty much 100% private land before I took this job. Pretty much just hunting all family farms, and that was it. But once I started here, you know, I started finding coal companies and all kinds of different properties.
Yeah, gotcha. So on these properties that you get access to, whether they're individually owned or owned by a company or whatever, talk to us a little bit about how you approach or what steps you take to see if you can actually hunt that piece of property to try to get permission on, you know, whatever piece of property you run across.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, a lot of times I'll be out, you know, taking care of wells or something. And you kind of, when you're going there every day and every day and every day, you're going to run into somebody eventually. So a lot of it's just word of mouth, running into a landowner. I might see him 20 times before I, you know, ask him about hunting. And a lot of times, you know, I know, you know, it doesn't work out. But I would say the majority of the properties that I hunt are, there's other people hunting them. There's a lot of people hunting them, and it's kind of public, but it's just not public knowledge that you're not just going to run across it. You know what I mean? So with Onyx hunt maps and stuff like that, and just really doing the research, I kind of find them, and there's not really anybody to ask. You just find out that they're public. Just not a lot of people know about them for whatever reason.
Gotcha. So are these smaller public land pieces that may not be posted as public hunting that you're getting access to?
Yes, exactly. Like, there's some of them that are great big pieces that they're not great pieces that if you're looking at them from the road or whatever, people might see them and say that's too thick, or it's, you know, it doesn't look great. There's not big, great big fields or easy access, you know, but I think that's what keeps people out of them, though, a good bit. Just they're kind of crappy pieces. And when you see, like, rifle season, yeah, there's always a bunch of people in them. But archery season, there's usually not near the people.
Right. That's crazy you mentioned that, because one of the best properties that I ever hunted, and on the very first year that I ever hunted this property, I think I saw 5 deer. And this is no joke, and people can call me full of shit, but in the first year that I hunted this property, I hunted it quite a bit because I was unemployed at the time, and I think I saw 4 or 5 deer over 170 inches on one piece of property that, when you're driving down the road, it just looked like some CRP fields back to a fence line. But what you couldn't see is like the drainage drops down, it starts to get thick, the timber grows up, and there's really good bedding, and it's connected to another piece of property. So from the road, it looks like garbage, but you get into the property, and it held something really special. And that was right around the time where digital maps slowly started becoming more popular and more accessible, and you could sit there and look at that stuff and realize, oh my God, you know, this is an overlooked piece of property.
Exactly. Yep. Same thing. A lot of times too, with finding it, I'm seeing a buck I want to hunt before I even, you know what I mean? I don't really see a property, so I'd like to hunt that property. I would see bucks in areas and then try to get as close to them bucks as possible on the public. You know what I mean? And they're just seeing that it seemed to work out more times than not.
Gotcha. So the story of this particular buck, what was the name that you gave him?
Pinky.
Okay. And that's what we're going to reference, Pinky. All right. So, so the story about this buck, I mean, you were hunting private ground for however, many years, then you got this job and this job kind of opened the door through this job and through digital maps. It kind of opened the door for you to find some additional public land to start hunting. Correct?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. All right. So does the story of Pinky start or take place at all on public ground, or is most of it done on private ground that you got permission to through your job?
So the story where it starts, I could not hunt the deer when I first found him, because the property was leased. It was public ground, and then it was leased the very first year that I found him. So after I found the very first shed, I couldn't hunt the deer for the first year.
Okay. All right. So what do you mean when you say it was public, then it got leased? Like, was it a piece of property that the landowner gave anyone permission, or was it a program through the state that made it public?
So the property was owned by a coal company. And then I don't know if it was a worker or who, but somebody leased that property that year and had the hunting rights. So they didn't, they leased it, you know, the beginning of deer season, I guess. That was the only time that it was private, is when it began. So the spring of 2015, I found a shed, and then deer season in 2015, the property was leased, but it was only for that 1 year. That was the last year that it was leased.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. So let's go all the way back to 2015, and I want you to start this journey, this story of the buck Pinky. So How does this story start?
All right. So in 2015, I'm working, you know, on the gas wells, and it was kind of a late night, so I was stuck out there, I don't know, till about 5 o'clock. And I just decided to take the long way home so I could check some hay fields and stuff on my way home for sheds. And I glassed a few fields and didn't really see anything. And I got to this property which I had heard that there was big bucks in there before. And I knew there was bucks there my whole life, pretty much, you know. And I was cruising by and I spotted a 5-point sod just right off the road, like 40 yards off the road. So I picked it up, and it was the biggest shed I had found in my life there, and which I had been shed hunting my whole life. So I was really excited about that shed, you know. So next day, I'm chomping at the bit all day at work, just ready to go find this other sod. So I went home and picked up my wife, which only leaves us probably about an hour of daylight, you know, left in the day. So we get back over there, and my wife had never found a shed before. 20 minutes in, she finds the right sod to that buck.
To Pinky?
No. This wasn't Pinky. No, this was another big buck. So those sheds scored 138 inches, which is a monster for this area, which is a big buck, you know what I mean? So that just kind of got me in the area of those sheds, and I started looking everywhere. You know, I was all over that property.
So on this piece of property, though, real quick,
yeah.
When you saw this shed from the road, was it on public ground, or did you have to go somewhere to get permission to start to shed hunt it?
So it was public coal company at the time. At the time, yes. And then just after that, the property was leased out.
Okay. All right. So yep. you and your wife found some really good sheds, your biggest one, and that got you thinking about this property, and then you continue to shed hunt it.
Yes. And then I which I had permission through the coal company because my mother worked there. Yep. My mom is not a coal miner either, so don't get that rumor out there.
That's funny. All right, so what else did you find on this piece of property that you and your wife found these sheds to?
Okay, so that year there was apparently a ton of bucks living on this, and the public is only probably 50 to 60 acres. It's not a huge piece. So I just started going all over, and I probably found another 10 sheds just in that little area. Nothing special, but I found one that was really chewed up, but it had a long, like a 9-inch bladed G2. Never thought anything of it. Honestly, it was one of those sheds that was so chewed up that you almost just leave it there, you know? I mean, just really bad shape. So didn't really think much of it. The next year, the summer of 2015, I'm looking for the big buck, you know, the 138-inch set. I know he's going to be a monster. That's the buck I'm looking for. But at this point, I know that I can't hunt there because it was leased at this point. But still going by every once in a while, you know, in the summer, trying to get some velvet footage or whatever. Never see the buck that I found the sheds off of. But this is whenever I first see Pinky. Me and my wife see Pinky a few times. Always pretty dark, never got a good look at him, but he had a big kicker off of his G2 that looked like a pinky finger. That's where the name started for that buck.
Gotcha. So you found this chewed up shed on this property, a little bit of foreshadowing there. That's yep. One of Pinky's sheds, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yep. So then throughout the summer in 2015, you're driving along, you're doing some, you know, you're doing some velvet scouting and whatnot, and you run into, or you find this buck, you name him Pinky. Now in 2015, yep. Describe to the listeners what Pinky looked like.
Okay. He would be just a monster. I mean, this would be the biggest buck I'd ever seen anywhere in Pennsylvania. It was, and I hunt Ohio a little bit. This is still the biggest buck I'd ever seen. And this would have been in June or might have been July of 2015. So he wasn't fully developed yet, but he's still 20 inches wide, super long brow tines, 8 or 9 inch brow tines, just a monster buck. And like I said, he had that big long kicker off of his G2 that was probably 3 or 4 inches. So that's when I really started going to the bordering properties and trying to get permission, but it wasn't happening.
Right. Okay. So in 2015, given you found his shed, although really chewed up, that spring, what did you think his age was when you're looking at him in summer?
I mean, to me, I've never seen a buck that big, so I was thinking that he was old. But knowing that that shed was as small as it was, because the shed was, I'm just guessing, 120-inch buck, you know, kind of small, compact, tight rack, basket rack. So we're thinking at least 3 or 4 years old then, you know, but that's a giant 3-year-old if it is. But yeah, amazing, amazing buck at the time.
Gotcha. So you're thinking at this point, you know, you saw the largest whitetail you've ever seen in your life, and your mind, just like all of the hardcore guys do, how do I kill this deer? All right, what do I have to do to kill this deer? And you start the process of, because the land that you saw him on is leased to another hunter, you start knocking on doors all around the property. I do this almost every year, right? Start knocking on doors, try to get permission, and it sounds like it was a no-go.
Yes, absolutely. And that's pretty much the end of 2015 for me. I mean, I still drove by there all the time and did everything. I just trying to see him, you know, I would just love to have seen him again. But for 2015, that was pretty much it. The buck that that other buck I had the sheds off of, he got shot. And I kind of just assumed maybe Pinky also got shot. But just never heard much about it. And kind of just gave up on it.
Yeah. So what about the area? Like, typically, even in Iowa, when a big buck shows up, the rumor train starts to talk a little bit, right? And although the score, you know, like, oh man, I saw a really big buck in this field, you know, then that goes on to a next guy. Did other people know about this property and know about Pinky before, you know, during this whole journey that you took with him?
So at this early in the story, not a lot. I would say there was maybe one or two other guys that knew about him. But it definitely got worse to where it was almost, it was ridiculous. Like this year was ridiculous. It was as bad as I've seen. A lot of people knew about him. Yeah.
Gotcha. All right. So 2015, I mean, you just figured someone shot him. Now, what happened in 2016?
So 2016, the property gets opened up for public hunting. There's public access signs up, everything, the whole nine yards, which I actually was kind of bummed about, to be honest. I thought that was going to be really bad. I was going to be in there with, you know, swamp. There's only 50 or 60 acres there. But me and my buddy, we hang up some trail cameras. And the same week that we hung the cameras, me and my wife are back over there, see Pinky in Velvet again. And he is enormous. I mean, the biggest buck. I couldn't even believe it. I mean, he was that big for around here. And had the same frame, same big long kicker off his G2. And now I can hunt him.
Right. And this is a mainframe, you know, 10, right?
That year he would have been 11, yes.
Okay, so
he would have been 11 point.
11 pointer, so it was a mainframe 10 with a kicker, right? Which made him 11 points?
No, 16 he would have been a mainframe 11 with the kicker, so it put him at a 12.
Okay, I got you. Okay, cool.
Yep.
All right, so rough, when you're looking at him in Velvet and you're shitting your pants at this point, you're like, oh my God, that buck is back again. He's alive. I have I have the ability to go after and hunt him now. Real quick, what do you think he scored in 2016 when you're looking at him, when you first saw him? I mean,
when I first saw him, I know that the PA state record is like in the upper 170s. In my mind, if I can kill this buck with a bow, it's going to be the state record. I mean, I was truly thinking he's going to be in the mid 170s at least. Which he's only, you know, he was still not full grown either. His times were kind of shorter when I seen him the first time in Velvet that year. But knowing how big he was the year before and this year how much bigger he was, I knew he was going to be a giant buck.
Gotcha. So you're thinking over one. You're thinking high 170s in 2016.
And that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
And then we'll get to this.
Okay, I got you. All right. Shed, so
So
you get access to the property. Now, I know you. I know what you're thinking. Now it's time to get into this property and figure it out and try to kill this deer. So what are the next steps?
Yeah.
What's the next step that you take?
So we start pressing in the summertime still, just trying to get our bearings, you know, of what these deer are, how they use it and what they're doing. And it's pretty much just everything, just all thicket. There's a lot of steep bedding, you know, a lot of steep, like, cliffs where there's flats on them. And we found some beds on there and whatnot. But there's, like, there's no real fields or anything to know where they're going to feed. There's no, like, acorn crops really or anything. It's just all like timbered, really young trees and just super thick. So we didn't really know where to start, to be honest, which there wasn't many options either, because there isn't even any trees that are old enough to even get stands in hardly. I mean, I'd say the highest I've been in a tree in that whole property is 15 feet, just because you can't get off the ground, and the higher you get, it's so thick, like you can't see, you know?
Right. Right. So describe this property to us since you've been in there and you had time to scout it.
Yeah. So it's basically just let me think of the words here. It's basically just a super thick bottom. There's a creek going down through it, and there's a coal mine portal building right smack in the middle of it with a parking lot. There's big farms all around it. There's a big horse farm around it, just a lot of big farms, and they all just kind of come to this super thick 60 acres that really has nothing in it other than just thickets, a lot of Osage orange trees that are folded over. Like, a lot of the beds that I found that buck actually bedded in are just trees laid over. And I mean, that deer would hear you coming from a mile away, just how it's set up. Like the only way to get in that holla, he can hear you from pretty much either point. Like, there's only two points that he could really bed at. And, there's really not much to the property, just super thick. And, you know, that's pretty much it.
Gotcha. So
it's one giant holla.
So it sounds to me like the way the entire area laid out, that it was just a convergence of terrain features all into one 50-acre property that was just overgrown and basically perfect deer habitat.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it actually got noticeably thicker every year. Like, it got harder and harder to get back in there. Just, it was that thick.
Okay. So through your scouting, did you find in the summertime, which kind of sucks because it is really thick and nasty in there during the summertime, were you able to get in there and find some good tree stand locations to where you thought you might be able to, you know, have an encounter with this buck?
Yeah, it was one of those deals where the more you pressed in, like, everything looked the same, but it seemed like every corner you turned, you know, you're like, man, this could be a great spot. This could be a great spot. But it was just a lot of, we found out just after, you know, in bow season, it was just a lot of nocturnal activity. Like, that whole property was kind of nocturnal, you know. It was just kind of a place where they all hung out in there at night, but there wasn't a lot going on during the day. That's for sure.
Gotcha. Okay. As you get closer to the season, when's opening day for Pennsylvania?
It's always around October 1st. It might be a few days before or after, but
okay. So as the season, you know, gets closer, did you feel that you had this property figured out to where you were going to go in and felt confident hunting this deer, or did you think, well, it's already summertime, it's already thick in there. I'm just going to have to run and gun and play it, you know, just go with the flow.
Yeah. 2016. Really what I thought is I thought the deer was going to get blowed out of that area fairly quick is what I thought. If we didn't kill him in the first week, he was probably going to get pushed out of there just with other people being allowed to hunt there, you know? And being that, like, the access, like, it's not like you can get on the back side of the property and hunt it. The access, there's only one way to get in, one way out. It's, like, landlocked. So I knew everybody going in the same direction, we're just going to blow this deer out of here, and I'm trying to figure out where he's going to go. Kind of in the same boat I was in 15, just at a standstill, really.
Okay. So when you started hunting this property, did the activity instantly pick up on there, or did you realize that, hey, I you were hunting it by yourself for a little bit and the word necessarily didn't get out about it, or did it instantly become a quote unquote piece of public ground that got pounded?
So a lot of guys on Saturdays and things like that, it got a little crazy, you know, and which is, it hurts it throughout the week just the same, but people started coming in and out, but they kind of seemed to figure out pretty quick that how thick it was, and you didn't see the same guys hunting it over and over is what I'm trying to say, I guess. Like, you might see a guy there once, you never see him again.
Right. Because they realize how difficult of a property it is to hunt.
Yeah, just there's no, you know, you can't just go in there and hop in a climbing tree stand or something like a lot of public lands.
Right.
It just doesn't work like that.
Okay. All right. So 2016 season comes. Any trail camera pictures, any sightings? Like, walk us through how that season went.
Okay. So through 2016, my buddy was actually going to college, so he was in there a lot more than I was because I was working. We got a few pictures of him here and there, and then nothing. Right after bow season, I had even more cameras in there, and he pretty much just disappeared. So opening day of rifle season, I didn't go over there in rifle season. I just try to stay away from public land, and rifle season's a little dangerous sometimes. And the buck actually got shot at on the neighboring property. At least somebody said they shot at a 180-inch buck. So I was assuming it was him, you know? So that was a little nerve wracking, but at least I knew he was alive. You know, I knew he made it. Just kind of hoping he didn't get hit in the guts or something. But once again, just losing sleep, wondering if the deer's alive for the next season. So after rifle season, I mean, I think it was literally the day after rifle season, I go and I'm pulling all the cameras, pull all the cameras, and still nothing. Never got any pictures of them. I'm going to say, I think it was the first week of January, I go back over there just to take a look, and I end up finding his left side. Yes, very early. Yeah. Yeah, which saves him too, because we have a late archery and muzzleloader season that comes in. It actually starts today, on the day after Christmas. So, you know, who's to say he wouldn't have got whacked with a muzzleloader, because he went right back in that main public land, right back in that main hollow. That's where I found that shed. So,
and just one of his sheds.
Yeah, just his left side. I should have named him Lefty, because that's all I could ever find was his left side for whatever reason. But so I searched like for a few weeks, honestly, on that small property, and I thought maybe, you know, he lost it somewhere else, or I don't know. I never gave up. I kept looking until a woman that I know, she actually found his right side a few weeks later.
Was she actively shed hunting, or was this on her property, like this buck dropped it in her yard or something like that?
So I think she just shed hunted the property, kind of the same deal. Just I don't even think she hunted there, but she could have been, I don't know, looking for ginseng or something, but yeah, she ended up finding it. And it was like in the middle of a bush. But yeah, in that year, that my side, it had 6 points on the left side, and he scored 72 inches. So yeah, it didn't put him in the upper 170s, but he's still a giant.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So 2016, now you know you have access to this property. You find his sheds, which is typically a good indication that this buck has made it through the hunting seasons, right? He's now, he doesn't have any headgear on, so he could just look like a doe for the rest of the season. Now, knowing that, what was your plan going into the 2017 summer?
So I still knew that the pressure was going to push him out of there. So I still kept trying to find more properties. And I actually did gain access on a property just south of this property. But I still hung cameras in there. In the summer of 2016 was just, I don't have us messed up, are we? I found the shed in the spring of 17. Okay.
Yeah. Spring of 17.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Found. Yep. Okay. So the summer of 17, it was absolutely crazy. Like, I got probably 10,000 pictures of him throughout the summer.
Now, was it on that big public land thicket, or was it on the piece of property that you got access to?
He was on the public. So tons and tons of pictures throughout the summer, all the way up in, to the middle of September. So now I only have 15 days until bow season. So this is the closest, you know, I've had pictures of him to the season yet. And so kind of lose track of him a little bit in the beginning of bow season. I get him like October 10th. I get him on camera. You know, he's starting to be, it's all nocturnal, but he's starting to be a little bit more visible than he was in years past.
All right. So real quick, what did he do? What did he do in the antler department from 2016 to 2017?
Yeah. So he really blew up. Like he lost his pinky, he lost his kicker off of his G2, but he was just a giant 6x5. And so he's a mainframe 11 point. He got way, way heavier, like super massive. Yeah. And pretty much kept the same, you know, the same frame, same long brow times, that would have been his biggest year right there. Was 2017.
Okay. So now that you're starting to get more trail camera pictures of him, did that give you a better idea of what his age was?
Yeah. So I'm thinking, you know, I had the shed from 2015, which was probably at least from 14, or it could have been even from 13, honestly. That's how chewed up it was, you know? So I was thinking at least he's 6 or 7, you know, at least I would think.
Okay. So 6 or 7 in 2017, he blows up to what is his biggest rack yet. And he's nocturnal, but he's starting to make himself a little bit more visible on the property because you got trail cameras. Now, from a strategy standpoint, what did getting access to that other farm that bordered that piece do for you?
It actually did absolutely nothing, but yeah, it didn't work out well, but that'll be part of, I'll get to that. So I kept pressing in bow season, and like, I was all in at this point. You know, the year before I was kind of iffy just cause all the other people and how he was on the other property here and there. I still wasn't 100% committed on this buck. But 2017, I was fully committed. Every time I got to go hunting, I was hunting over there or setting up where I could see, you know, where I could see these brushy fields and stuff, or this brushy area. So I just kept plugging away. And then in November, like usually when I'm taking my vacation, it would actually be in the middle of October, the company I'm working for gets bought out by a bigger company. lose all my vacation. I have to burn it in the middle of October. So there goes my week vacation that I usually take in the rut, you know?
Man, that sucks.
Yeah. Killed me. Yeah, it killed me. So we go through that. I hunt, you know, the weekends as much as I can through there. Get him on camera. I'm still getting him on camera at night. And I never had an opportunity at him. Really, every time I sat in there, I really didn't see any deer. And I know it was because of the access, just having to go up at the main holla. Everything knows you're coming in. Everything knows you're going out. You know, it's just, it was a really bad setup.
Right. So at this time, like, I have basically my main hunting property is on a bigger scale, just like that, right? Where there is,
yeah,
only, it's landlocked and I don't have permission from any other direction, but you have to go in to get to the back piece where most of the hunting, like the most of the good hunting is, and you're blowing something, yeah, out, and it's just a matter of what you blow out when you go in, like what you go in there. So how did you adapt to that hunting prop, you know, to that piece of property, knowing that, because you, there's a giant buck in there. At the same, yeah, time, you know that going in at certain times will blow this deer out. So how did you adapt to that?
So I did the only thing that I knew to do, and that was just go in extremely early and not leave till dark. And I did that, and I definitely seen more deer, but I think another problem was he just had every buck ran out of that property. You know, I would see a straggler here and there, but there was no buck living in there in all of 2017, no other buck. I would see 4 and 5 doe a day, all day sits, and that was it. So both season kind of passed by. Like I said, I barely spent any time hunting, honestly.
Just because
with the job thing.
You were forced to burn your vacation.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this. I've had to do some things like, I don't know, like I remember one year it was the middle of the rut and I had a buddy who needed help moving, and I was just, yeah, like, he's my friend, so I'm going to help him. But at the same time, I was pissed, like, because I wasn't, yeah, in the tree stand. What was your attitude like knowing that you literally could not hunt, but at the same time there was a 180-inch deer running around in the timber?
I almost quit my job. Honestly. Yeah. I mean, I would be at work and I would just call my dad, call my wife, and just seriously consider, like, I got to get out of here. You know, I got to figure this out. And yeah, you got to do what you got to do. I just toughed it out and just worked, and it killed me. It really did kill me. 'Cause I knew it was a once in a lifetime buck, you know?
Right. Right.
So all it,
right,
just tore me up.
So it sounds to me like the 2017 season, although you did get to hunt him, no encounters from the tree stand, but he started to make himself more, like he got his picture taken a lot is what I'm getting at. Right. So
yeah. Yeah.
You had an idea of, did you get a better idea of his travel patterns through that piece?
Yeah. So bow season passed and November 15th, our season goes out in between bow season and rifle season. I know most states aren't like that. I don't know how I was, but so November 15th, our bow season is out. There's no deer season in. I have him on camera, broad daylight at noon, bumping a doe right through where I had been bow hunting. So that was big, you know. I knew he was still in that main holla, and he didn't do what he did the year before and evacuate, you know? So rifle season came. I didn't get the first day off. I'm still fighting vacation because I'm in this brand new job or with this brand new company. The first Saturday comes. Well, I just keep hunting at the bordering property thinking, you know, he's going to get blowed out of here, be on this bordering property where he was the year before. Where the other guys talked about shooting at him. So that came and go, no luck. Somehow nobody sees this deer in rifle season, at least that I heard about. We hear rumors he got shot and this guy got him and somebody found him dead. Another thing I'll add, not to backtrack, but that year we actually lost a lot of deer from either EHD or CWD. We lost a lot of deer for whatever reason.
Dry, really dry summer?
Yeah, in that area, we lost a lot of deer. So that we were dealing with that too. You know, we didn't know. Maybe he toughed it out through the summer and then maybe somebody really did find him dead.
Yeah.
So throughout that whole rifle season, I had cameras in there. I just didn't really, I couldn't go in there and check them, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah. The day after rifle season, I go in there and I had him on camera in the daylight on the last day of rifle.
Man.
And I said, this deer stayed in this hollow this whole, through all this, all season. He was in the same hollow.
Yeah. Was there any other hunting pressure that you saw?
I actually got guys on trail camera, on the same camera that I had him on. So now I know it's going to be a long year, but I'm going to kill this deer in 2018. I knew I was. I really thought I would have killed him with a bow, honestly. Just knowing that he wasn't leaving there. And I thought it would just even get tighter, you know? I figured his range would even get tighter the following year.
Right. So was your confidence kind of goes through the roof for the upcoming season. Now,
yeah.
Why was that? Why did you get this confidence all of a sudden?
Just the trail cameras. You know, I've listened to your podcast and some other podcasts where guys talk about, like, a trail camera doesn't really help you with intel for this season, but man, if you got notes from last year on what a certain buck did to the following year, that's a big deal, you know? And I've seen it with other bucks that I've hunted. Like if you can figure something out that they do one year and especially if they're in the same area, like three or four times in the daylight like that, I'm like, this is game over. I'm going to get an opportunity at them for sure. So I think that was just the biggest thing, the cameras and the notes, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So you got this intel on him now. What did that intel tell you? I mean, was there a specific wind direction or time of day that he was working through? Did you say, okay, well, I need to hunt mornings or I need to hunt more afternoons or I need to lay off until these specific conditions?
So it was mostly midday activity, which I didn't know if he was being bumped, you know, or I knew the one he was with the doe. So I really planned on being there the first week in November and just not leaving. You know what I mean? Just not leaving as long as the wind was right, not leaving. But at the same time, when I got those pictures on the last day of rifle season, I'm thinking I might be able to stick this deer in our late archery season. So I went and hung three more cameras that day. Excuse me. So I only let a week go by and I come back and check the one camera that I had right real close to the road. Just an easy one to check, you know, without, you don't really mess anything up. And it was before Christmas. It was before Christmas. I check it and he dropped both sides already.
Oh boy. So he's an early dropper.
Yeah. Yeah. Very early. So right then I'm getting off of work at 5:30, 6 o'clock every night. I told my wife, I said, look, I cannot sleep. I can't wait till Saturday to start looking for these. So I go home, get a headlamp. I start shed hunting at night, looking for this buck shed.
Are you serious?
I'm like, I swear to you, you can ask my wife, I swear.
Man.
Over and all week, just because I know if I get within 20 yards of these things, you're going to see them, you know?
Right, right.
And so I did that, and I never did find it until the following Saturday.
And you
still before Christmas.
And you ended up finding one of his sheds?
I find his left side again.
Okay.
Yeah, I find his left side, and then my buddy finds his right side, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks later, but it was chewed up already.
Right, right. Okay. Wow. So,
and that made him a 70, his good side that it wasn't chewed up was 77 inches that year.
Okay. Yeah. So that's, so, 77 plus, you know, 77, that's 154. And then what did you give him? I don't know.
At the time I gave him a 17 inch inside spread, but when I killed him this year, he was 19 and a half inside. So,
okay. Okay.
Yeah, he's up there. He was up there.
Yeah, absolutely. So big deer regardless. Now.
Yeah.
All right. So, so you find his sheds. So at this point in this deer's life, he has, I've had this happen with me before where you get to a, like, this deer becomes all you think about, like blinders.
Yeah.
Right. I chased a deer for 5 years one time, and literally I thought about that buck multiple times a day for 2 or 3 years. Right. And it becomes obsessed. Every moment you're looking at a digital map, or you're, you know, you're thinking about what you did wrong the previous year, or how you were going to approach him, and you start breaking every single thing down to the most common denominator, to the lowest possible decimal point. And I know that's how it was for me that summer. That summer in 2018, after you found his sheds, you realized, okay, man, well, I got him. He's going to survive again, hopefully. Now, what were you thinking going into the 2018 season?
Well, I was thinking, I'm not going to put too much pressure on him. I know that deer's going to stay there, and I know it's going to take a hot doe, to get him up. I knew I was just going to put all my time and make sure I'm ready for my vacation. I was going to take, I had 9 days vacation I could use in November, and I just planned on November 2nd till the end of our season, which I believe was the 13th. I was going to be in there every day. Every day. That was an archery, yes. So, leading up to the season, I had cameras. I mean, just same thing. Thousands and thousands of pictures of him in the summer. Like, you know, it was pretty amazing. He was just super small home range, you know. The week before bow season, my wife and I, we go over and we're sitting, something that I guess I should throw this in. In 2017, the property kind of got changed around a bit because a pipeline came through and cut a new right away through the middle of the property. So that cuts the property down even more to a smaller property, you know, smaller timber, I guess. It helps for rifles for sure. So the week before bow season in 18, me and my wife are sitting on the opposite side of the road watching this right away. And there's 4 or 5 young bucks already on the right away. And about a half hour before daylight, Pinky steps out. And I mean, I was shocked. I was like, I cannot believe this deer is still moving in the daylight. Other bucks I've hunted 120, 130 inch bucks, you know, 3 and 4 year olds that are on they're not coming out in the daylight at that time of year. Around here, it's very.
What time very of year rare. Was that? That was in the summertime before the.
This is right. So, like September.
Okay, I gotcha.
Late September. Late September. I mean, usually they're on acorns and they're just not coming out in the open like that.
Right.
You know,
so he stops out. Often.
He steps out. We film him for a few minutes. He doesn't spend too much time out there. He goes right back in. So 2 days go by. Now it is the night before bow season. We're sitting over there. He comes out again.
Oh, my God.
I looked at my wife, and I said, this deer's dying tomorrow. This is it. I'm going to kill this deer. And I didn't have a stand hung over there or anything. So I took my stand and sticks the next day. I waited till, I think, noonish. Run up this right away, get set up, and I'm thinking this, I can't believe this is going to happen. You know, this is going to happen. He's going to come out. 2 days in a row, he's already did it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So deer just start coming out all over. And, you know, inconsistent wind, kind of winds just all over the place. I was panicking pretty bad. I ended up getting busted by does like down below me, and they blew for pretty much the rest of the night, and he never come out. So
I wonder why.
For a little bit. Yeah, definitely. It was a heartbreaker.
Oh,
but
man.
Yeah. That was something with this year. I wasn't going to be, what am I trying to say? I was going to be aggressive. If I blew him out 100 times, I was going after this deer. You know, I wasn't going to play it safe like I did the year before, you know.
Right.
I was going after him. So throughout the rest of October, I was still getting pictures of him, but very few, up until I think October 10th.
Yep.
And then just completely gone. Just no pictures of him.
Any other pictures of any other hunters? Putting pressure on
No, but my one buddy was hunting fairly close, and same thing, his picture, he had one picture of him and lost it, but I knew the bordering properties. There was a lot of pressure on them, so you would think that would help me, but it wasn't, because even though they're coming in on that side, they're still coming on that public land, you know, they're still hunting it, and
yeah,
there was definitely pressure on it this year for sure.
Okay. So October 10th, what, he disappears for a little bit?
Disappears, and that was actually the last picture I ever got of him, was October 10th.
Okay.
Never got another trail cam picture of him ever.
Okay. Now, what happened? You think he got bumped?
Yes, and I think he might have just stayed on the private land and just kind of, he got super nocturnal in years before that, you know?
Right.
I would think he probably just didn't move a whole lot.
Right. That's crazy. It sounds like this deer was bedding on another property and used that piece as kind of a travel corridor for most of his
Absolutely.
Life. And they never Absolutely. Really lived on it.
Yeah, exactly. And that was, I think, like the pictures in the summertime, yeah, he was there in the daylight, but a lot of the time, you know, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and when he was there at 2 o'clock in the morning, he might be in there, he might come by the camera 3 and 4 times,
yeah,
in a night, you know, like he would mill all over that property. But it just, I think you're right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think he bedded on the private, and the private is way steeper. It's the same thickness, but it's way steeper back in there.
Right.
And he probably loved that, you know.
Right. Okay. So when he disappears for, you know, it's like a couple of days. Okay. All right. Now it's been a week. Now it's been two
yeah.
weeks. Now it's been 3 weeks. Now you're starting yeah. to get into the rut. No pictures of him. It's vacation time. Now what's going through your head?
So it's very hard when you're not getting pictures like that, but I just stayed 100% mentally focused on the pictures I had the year before of him staying in that hall. I just pretty much brainwashed myself telling him that he was in that hollow and he's going to stay in there. So I get through the rest of the October. November 2nd comes. That's my first day of vacation. And actually the week before that, I could hunt mornings because I was working an afternoon shift. So I hunted a few times in there, but I didn't want to mess it up too bad knowing I had the whole week to go. And I seen a little bit of rotting activity, but I mean, you know, 4 and 5 hour sits, and I was only seeing a buck here and there, you know, a lot of times not seeing any deer at all. But I still was pretty confident with the pictures from the year before. So November 2nd came, and, you know, I was talking to my wife and my dad, and I said, I've probably only sat 10 all day sits in my life before this year. I'm not leaving this woods. I am staying here daylight till dark, period. It's just a matter of time, you know? So November 2nd, first day sitting there, I never saw a deer.
Man,
never saw one deer.
That's tough.
Yeah, very hard, very hard.
Now for, time's sake here,
yeah,
you know, we got this really long story leading up to this year, and obviously you killed him.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
any sightings of him throughout your vacation, your rut vacation?
So I never saw him. I'm not sure who got the picture, but somebody took a picture of him in the hay field that was about 200 yards from where I was sitting.
Okay.
While I was in the tree. Okay. Yeah, so that was it. I never got another trail camera picture of him or anything.
Okay. So
bow season passed.
So bow season passes. Now yep. It's rifle season. You burnt your vacation. Now, was this just like a weekend getaway when you ended up getting on him and killing him?
So I had the Monday off. I think I would have been off until Wednesday.
Okay.
So the first day was a Monday. So same thing. I was just kind of praying that he went back to that holler, but I knew there was going to be a lot of guys this year. And normally I would just stay away from that with, like I said, with the rifle kind of makes me nervous with all them people. But a few days before I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go there. I got just as much right as anybody else to sit on the most obvious spot. I'm going to sit on that new right away where I saw him in the summer, and he's going to come across. I mean, I might not be there. It might be the second week when he comes across there, but that deer is coming across that right away at some point, surely. So I sit up there and I go over there at 3:30 in the morning on the first day, just because I know there's going to be people wanting to sit on that right away. So I do that, and I got a few people trying to walk up to me. I just shine them with my light, and everybody was super, super cool about it. And even once it got daylight, a few guys tried to almost cut me off. I kind of just waved them down, and, you know, everybody's real nice, which was great. You know, that made the world. So hunted all day, right? I mean, sitting right there, I saw one buck, one deer from all the way up until 3:30 p.m.
Right.
So
let's
getting packed.
Let's get to the point now where, you know, it's obviously it's rifle season. You're on public land. It's pressured to shit. Talk to us about the day it all comes together, right?
Okay. Yep. So at 3:30, I had these two guys pull up behind me, and they kind of started walking up into the main hall that I keep referring to, like his bedroom, you know? So they're walking up in there, and a couple minutes later, I see him come back out. I was like, okay, no big deal. And I'm kind of just watching them, and I look back to the main right away, and he's at the very top, kind of angling, running, not running, but he's moving, you know, walking down towards me, Pinky is. And it's about, he's pushing 350 yards. So I was nervous about that, and I'm nervous that he's moving as quick as he is. So I get the gun on him, and I get my gun zeroed to 350, and I'm leading him, you know, waiting on him to stop. I was scared to death to try to stop him because I was afraid to just take off even harder, you know. So I kind of just hold on the front of his chest and just squeeze the trigger, and I didn't see anything happen. I didn't know if I hit him, if I didn't. And usually when that happens, you don't think you hit him. It usually doesn't work out, you know. So I was kind of mad at myself for even taking that shot with him moving. You know, I was kind of upset about that. So I hike up the right of way, I mean, as fast as I possibly can. I get up there, not really seeing anything. Finally, I find a little bit of hair and just a little bit of blood. And, you know, my heart was like just sunk. You know, I was sick, really sick. So I look out through there and find a little bit of blood. But now the problem is there's another right away 200 yards from this one, and he's headed for it. So if he goes across that right away, he's going to get shot by someone else. So I just sit there until dark, you know, kind of not knowing what to do. So I just sit there. My dad shows up and my father-in-law, and we get up there. We start pushing out the blood trail. Probably 100 yards in, we lose blood. So now I'm just like, you know, you put all that time into it, chase that deer for all that time, and just really make a mistake. At the time, I'm thinking I made a mistake just for pulling the trigger while he was still moving, you know? So once he crosses the next right of way, I know I have to, that's the border of the public land. So, I get a hold of another family member I know that has permission on there, make sure I can go on it. And, I get permission. We get to where we last had blood, look, and just kind of at a standstill for like a half hour. So, finally, I kind of can just see where he had stuff stirred up, just going out around the hill. We follow that a little bit, and my father-in-law finds a little speck of blood, And we do that for like another 50 yards. And we get to this tram road on the other person's property, on the private land. And I can just see his hoof prints, you know, because they're really big. So I'm just following them, not a whole lot of blood. And he started going downhill, and the blood just started pouring out of him. And I go to step over this barbed wire fence, and he's right there bedded 10 yards from me. So now I have, like I said, six people with me tracking this buck.
And you saw him bedded?
Yeah, he's bedded down.
And is he dead?
Away from me. He is still alive.
Okay.
Okay. So I have my father-in-law, my dad, and my two brother-in-laws with me. I pull up, shoot him in the neck. Deer turns around and runs right at us and almost takes out my little brother-in-law. And then he died.
So he got up, charged your brother-in-law, and he fell over dead.
Yes.
Oh my God.
It was weird because I was still mad. You know what I mean? I was pretty upset still. It's not really how I wanted it to go, you know?
Hey, I tell you what, it's not how you wanted it to go, but at the end of the day, dude, you killed this buck that you played cat and mouse with for 3 years.
Yeah. It is insane. It is insane for sure.
Wow.
But
I tell you what, man, unbelievable. That is one hell of a story. You got the sheds, you got the buck, you got his meat, and I'm sure he's going on your wall. So
for sure.
At the end of the day, man, that's one hell of a story. I really appreciate you taking time to hop on the podcast and share the story with us, man. Stud buck in a high pressured state, dude. I love it.
Well, I appreciate it, man. Thanks a lot.
And there you have it. Another podcast in the books to your ears. Huge shout out to Cody, man. One hell of a story. Really appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on and share that with us. Huge shout out to all of you for taking time out of your day to download and listen or do whatever it is that you do with this podcast, man. Really appreciate everybody tuning in. Huge shout out to all the partners of this podcast: Exodus, Ozonics, Wasp, Lone Wolf, Deer Lab, Prime, Ripcord, Ozonics, and Hunter Safety Systems. Guys, please go out and support those companies because they support this podcast. And huge shout out to my wife right now, who is, I don't know if you can hear him or not, but battling 3 ornery kids. And that's why I'm cutting this outro short today. So, as our friends from Hunter Safety Systems remind us all, if you're still hunting, please wear your damn safety harness. Have a good week.